everyone. It's Leslyn Keith here again with another research update flash briefing. I'm the Director of Research and President of the Board for the Lipedema Project. I like to keep you abreast of the latest research of relevance to lipedema with these flash briefings. So the paper I'd like to share with you today is titled Lipedema Research, Quo Vadis? By researchers in Austria and Germany, and it was published in the peer-reviewed journal, Journal of Personalized Medicine, in December of 2022. So the aim of this paper was to do a literature review that focused on lipedema research from the last few decades, and to answer the question, quo vadis, which is Latin for where are we going? So they really wanted to find out, how is research being done for lipedema, and is it being done in a way that is useful and is going to help us? And so just a couple other definitions that you may need if you decide to read this paper. Specifically, they're talking about ex vivo and in vitro sampling of tissues. And that means they're both looking at tissues outside of the body. One is they're taking ex vivo, I believe, is the kind they're taking tissue samples straight from the participants in the study, whereas in vitro is they went to a tissue repository, things that have been collected over time, and they took those tissue samples and see what they can get from them. And so they were looking at everything that's out there for this kind of research on lipedema and seeing if it was going to be favorable. And so one thing that they look at is the fat tissue. And so a couple of terms related to fat tissue is hyperplasia and fat hypertrophy. And hyperplasia is simply the development of lots of new fat cells. And this is considered more metabolically favorable, because the other one, hypertrophy, that means you just keep the same number of fat cells, but you just keep putting more and more stuff in them, so they get larger and larger and larger, and that's not as healthy. So those are a couple of terms there to keep in mind if you do read this article. So the methods that they used, they did not say how many papers that they included in this literature review or anything like that, but they did say that they looked at PubMed to search for lipedema studies that had been done over the last several decades. And they had that special focus, as I said, looking at those tissue studies, looking at either stuff from a repository or from participants that enrolled in a study. And they also wanted to look at what were the main obstacles that are hampering lipedema research. So what are their results? The first thing that they looked at was all the various studies and papers that were talking about the evidence for the presence of edema or swelling in lipedema. And really, they said right now it's very mixed. The authors really discussed the various impacts that common comorbidities of lipedema, such as obesity and venous disease, can have on fluid accumulation in lipedema. And that was one of the issues that has come up with various studies on lipedema, is how do you tease out if the swelling is from venous disease or obesity, or if this is a characteristic of lipedema itself? And that is still not clear. They talked about a lot of animal studies that are showing that, quote, lymph makes you fat. And what these animal studies are showing is that when you have impaired lymphatics, they can leak into the tissues, and that fluid congestion in that area of the leaky lymphatics can contribute to fat accumulation. And so is this something that is part of lipedema, is that localized fat accumulation? Also, imaging studies of lymphatics in participants with lipedema have really had inconsistent results. Some were showing anatomical and functional deficits, while others are not. So researchers say that, well, it's the obesity or the venous disease that's causing the swelling, while other studies show fluid congestion is present in lipedema before there's any obesity or venous disease. So just very conflicting results and really nothing conclusive yet. And then other studies that are showing that fluid accumulation and perhaps bruising may be caused by blood vascular deficits, such as that's in venous disease and capillary fragility, which may or may not be part of lipedema pathology. It's just a lot of unknowns in that area. Another big area of lipedema research is the search for a biomarker. So really looking for that unique and unambiguous molecular marker of lipedema. So something in the blood, in the tissue, maybe in the genes of patients with lipedema that says this person absolutely has lipedema because they have this unique biomarker. And that still has not been accomplished, but we're definitely making inroads in that direction. And in this review, the authors compiled an impressive number of studies that examine lipedema fat from tissue biopsies, from aspirate, from liposuctions of patients with lipedema. They had over 20 papers that they looked at just for this issue of looking for a biomarker for lipedema. And they presented what they found from all these, looking at these papers, and also suggested some areas for continued study. So one area that a lot of these studies looked at was adipogenesis, or the formation of fat tissue. And most of them found that there was significantly more fat in women with lipedema versus healthy controls, even when their age and BMI matched. And the information concerning lipid biogenesis and fat formation in lipedema is really lacking. We don't know what is the mechanism, why does fat form and proliferate in certain body areas in lipedema. And to be able to understand this, to know this, will, of course, really contribute to our understanding of lipedema and possibly how to better treat it. And then they were looking at those two terms, hypertrophy and hyperplasia, so two ways of getting excessive fat tissue. And they commented that on all these papers that they looked at, we still have not identified what is the initial trigger that causes fat accumulation to start in the first place. But current data seems to indicate that both hyperplasia and hypertrophy are present in lipedema. But the balance between those two may be very different for each woman. And this may be why there is such a different presentation of how fat accumulates and where and how much in each person with lipedema, because they have a different balance between the hypertrophy of their fat cells and the hyperplasia of the fat cells. And so to really understand how these two methods of fat accumulation work in lipedema, the authors state that studying non-obese lipedema patients is imperative in order to get that you're just looking at lipedema fat. And so it has to be someone who doesn't also have obesity. Then another thing they looked at when they were looking at all these tissue biopsy studies and stuff like that, looking for a biomarker, is the issues of chronic inflammation and oxidative stress, and really looking at chicken or the egg. So several studies found, of course, this increased presence of markers of inflammation and oxidative stress in fat tissue from participants with lipedema compared to those who had obesity. And this was not only in the fat aspirate from the liposuction surgery of lipedema patients that had the higher markers than those with simple obesity, but when you removed that fat, the lipedema fat, with the liposuction surgery, then their pain was significantly reduced. It's almost like you removed that chronic inflammatory oxidative stress, really diseased fat, and then their pain significantly reduced in the lipedema patients. So there's something in there. But what we don't know is that if lipedema causes the fat to become pathological and inflamed, or if the inflammation in the fat causes lipedema to develop. So that's the chicken or the egg. We don't know which comes first. And so understanding the triggers and the mechanisms is really crucial to our understanding and helping patients with lipedema. So next, the paper goes into future considerations for research and looking at these common dilemmas that are experienced by researchers who are studying lipedema. And so the authors suggest that while experienced healthcare providers can accurately diagnose lipedema in a clinical setting, I think it's still difficult. The diagnosis is difficult, but they say that a healthcare provider can diagnose it pretty easily if they're experienced in a clinical setting, but they said that no such clarity exists for the researcher. So clear agreement on what constitutes a lipedema diagnosis is necessary to allow studies that can be replicated, that can be used to aggregate the data from multiple studies together, and also to improve the ability to generalize the results out to a larger population instead of just the 20 women that were in the study. So here are a couple of dilemmas that the authors discuss. One is what they call the issue of the patient's weight. And so they say when they look at all these lipedema studies, there's a huge range of BMI represented in each of the stages. So you have a stage one, you put everybody into a stage one lipedema, and they have a BMI from normal weight all the way up to morbidly obese. And then you have a stage two lipedema group, and they're normal weight all the way up to morbidly obese. So there's just this huge range in weight and BMI for each of those stages. And so the authors state that it becomes necessary to find patients to study who do not have a comorbidity of obesity, and if possible, to recruit patients for each stage of lipedema. So have people in each stage that are not necessarily obese and just have lipedema stage one, two, or three. But the issue is that advanced stage lipedema without obesity is very rare, and it would be near impossible to have someone in those advanced stages of lipedema and, have a good sized group of that none of them have obesity. That would just really, it would keep you from doing the study. And another problem they said with weight is using BMI alone. So that is a ratio between their body weight and their height. And this simply is not descriptive of lipedema patients because it gives no information about where the fat is accumulated, which parts of the body are affected by lipedema. So they suggest that, yes, you can use BMI, you can use weight, but also use a waist to hip ratio. That would be more valuable. So a more narrow waist and a larger hip is more descriptive of where the body fat is. So the next thing they talk about was issues with edema and vascular disturbances or dysfunction. So looking at swelling and venous disorders. And the authors question why edema and vascular disturbances in lipedema have not yet been accurately and consistently characterized. What is the relationship between swelling and venous disease and lipedema? So simply right now that, as I was talking about before, that the various studies, there's just such a wide variance of what their conclusions are, what their data is showing. So they suggest that this is poor patient selection. So the characteristics of the patients, the people that are allowed to participate in the study, vary so widely that the results are all over the place. And so the authors suggest that really you have to have that non-obese patient with lipedema, and that would be the preferred person to study. And they also state that there really is a need to use significantly higher tech analysis of lipedema tissue to really discover what is happening at the molecular level, to really look deeply in there. And then another issue is the age variability, and this was particularly impactful when you look at the impact of hormones. And I know this comes up a lot in our community that we're talking about what are the impacts of hormones on lipedema. And so if you have, 18-year-old women all the way up to someone who's 75 or 80, they're at different places in their life. They have different impacts of hormones on their life. If they've had pregnancies, if they're undergoing that recently or trying to get pregnant, if they've just recently gone through puberty, if they're in perimenopause or significantly past menopause, there's different hormonal impacts on the body in each of those women. And so if you're bunching all those participants in a study together, are you really getting some useful information? Because the results are so varied. And then they also talk about what they call the dilemma with controls. So what should we be using as a control group? And they said that using a BMI matched control is not useful. In other words, you have someone with lipedema and say she weighs 250 pounds. And now you find another woman who does not have lipedema, but also weighs 250 pounds. But the authors of this paper, they say, well, there's such a crossover of in characteristics between conditions like lipohypertrophy, meaning excessive fat in the body, but without any of the disease, the impairment, the pathology that's found in lipedema. There might be crossover between lipedema and that condition of lipohypertrophy. There might be crossover with lymphedema patients. There might be crossover with obese patients. And so now you're matching them up by weight, but does that really cloud the results? And maybe we should be using completely healthy controls. So not trying to match people up by their weight. And lastly, they question on whether the current staging system, the way we describe the stages of lipedema, is that still accurate? Is that taking into account new information about lipedema? Is it useful? And so they said that each stage really must be seen as it's a complex, multifocal stage in that it has all these various conditions that add together to the lipedema. And so you need to look at all of her comorbidities. You have to look at her original weight if she had some surgery. You have to look at what is her family history. So really getting a really deep and rich history and clinical picture of each participant to describe each stage that they could be in. So I think what they were trying to say in that section of the paper is that we need to be a lot more descriptive in our stages. Maybe we're too simplistic on how we describe each stage of lipedema. And so here's the conclusions they came up with. They came up with several issues that they feel like are really hampering lipedema research. And one is that we don't have an animal model for lipedema. On a lot of other conditions, we can reproduce that condition like Parkinson's disease or dementia. We can make that in the animal, and then we can do various interventions, various tests to see what works on an animal. And then we start with that information and then translate it to humans. We can't with lipedema research. We don't have an animal model. We don't have a cell line that can be used so we can reproduce all of these tests. We can replicate these studies and get a really huge amount of data that then we can then translate into human research. We can't do that. And also they said, as we discussed, that high variability in the different patient populations that are in these studies, as far as their weight, as their age, all these things really make what they say as they make the scientific results of those studies unusable. And they feel like too little attention has really been paid to the problem of obesity. And how can lipedema be studied without the interference of weight and some of those obesity-associated pathologies? So the authors really urge us to continue to implement new findings into our thinking and into our design of research studies, as well as integrate the data from other disciplines to help us better understand lipedema. So this paper, I think, is really important for women with lipedema because I believe with the lack of agreed upon definition of lipedema, is severely hampering lipedema research. If we don't have a clear definition of what lipedema is, how can we study it? And so that's urgently needed to give greater strength to our research efforts and to find better answers for people with this disorder. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you haven't already subscribed to our daily flash briefings of tips, tools, and research about lipedema, you can subscribe at Apple, Spotify, Amazon Alexa, or at this website, lipedema-simplified.org/flash, where you'll find an archive of all of our flash briefings. You can now also follow Living Well with Lipedema on Amazon Music and get new episodes as they become available. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another research update flash briefing.